Coulter O'Ryan Smith is in studio with us. He's one of the actors from New Country and the creator and writer of this play, New Country, is with us as well, Mark Roberts. I've gone to the theater twice in the last month because I've decided that rather than talking to performers before I see their show, it'd be nice to talk about the performance itself.
Sure.
So it was a really tremendous show. It's exciting because it's so immediate to the people who are watching it. We're right on top of you, basically, is the structure at the Den Theater. Tell us a little bit about how you created these characters in New Country.
Well, I started writing a play. I wanted to write a play about how men are the cause of all evil in the world.
Okay.
But I wanted it to be funny. So I set it in the world of country music and gave them all Southern accents, and mm-hmm. It immediately became funny.
It is, and the play opens with, I'm guessing, the manager and the agent. I don't know if I actually was clear for me, because I probably missed it for a moment.
There really is no difference between a manager and an agent.
I know, but those are his manager, basically his people.
His people.
Yes. Yeah. The main character, not the main character, but the star who is getting married over this weekend.
Yes, and the young country star, the new country star.
Yes,
you know, it's the night before his big orchestrated wedding, and mm-hmm. it's in his hotel suite that he has gotten for his uncle.
And such a perfect location, by the way, to have a hotel, because it's so well done. The set is beautiful. I took pictures and I posted it on Facebook before it even started. And I mean, you've spent a lot of time in hotel rooms. And it's just one of those things where you're like, yeah, okay, that's where the bathroom is. This is the suite, and there's the bedroom. It's just so it's immediate to the audience. They know where the bellboy is going to come from.
Oh yeah.
And that's you, Coulter, by the way.
Absolutely.
Such a what is it? Come closer to the microphone, if you
absolutely.
Don't mind.
Absolutely. There we go.
Your entrance is wonderful because we start with the agent and manager or the Justin's people, and you come in with a gift basket. By the way, I think everybody got thirsty when they saw that bottle of Knob Creek.
Well, who doesn't get thirsty when they say bottle of Knob Creek?
Yeah, I was like, and I know that is it an unopened bottle? Have you guys ever opened that bottle?
It's just got tea in it. Yeah. I drink from it.
Oh, that's right, you do. That's right, it gets popped open.
Yeah.
And you even have all the stand where the glasses go in the refrigerator. It's the covering on the chairs, it has like that cow pattern.
Right.
Which is beautiful. I mean, every detail is just luscious in there, including the curtains and the whole thing. Coulter, I keep wanting to call you Ryan. I don't know why. Does that happen?
You know, you could blame it on my mother mm-hmm. for giving me that crazy middle name. But yeah, it happens a lot.
People, I apologize.
It's like, okay.
I'm going to put my hand right over it so I can't see it.
It's okay.
Coulter, where are you from originally?
I'm from Texas. I grew up just south of Fort Worth, about 45 minutes, a little bitty town, more cows than people.
Nice.
That'd be most familiar to most people to describe it that way. But it's called Alvarado.
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 And what brought you to Chicago from Alvarado?
Well, I got a degree in acting and directing, and I did a show in Dallas, and then I got really tired how hot it was down there, and I decided I want to see some more of the world and see what art in Chicago had to offer
me. And what it's like when it snows in April?
Oh, it's terrible. Oh, my goodness. I've been so depressed this week, up and down and all around, but Chicago can't figure out what it wants to do or what it really wants to be.
It does. Yeah, Mother Nature is bipolar.
Absolutely. Yeah. See, so I came up here. I wanted to have an opportunity to do more theater.
Mm-hmm.
When I got here, I got sour, didn't do anything for 3 years, and this is actually the first show I've done in Chicago. So
really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm glad that I caught you in this show, and I'm sure there's going to be many more.
I hope so.
And it is really a great cast. A lot of Chicagoans will recognize Will Klinger, who hosted Wild Chicago for many years, and now I think hosts another show that's nationally on different networks. I was talking to him about doing Wild Vacations, I think, is what he's got going on as well.
Yeah, and I think he's still back in gay porn. I think.
And this will be podcast for him. We'll go to iTunes and you can subscribe to the show. And Mark Roberts, I love in the stage bill, it talks in your bio about how in your first life, your second life, and your third life. Do you think of your life that way? First stand-up comedy, then being a playwright, and then writing for television? Oh, no, as an actor. So stand-up comedy, acting, writing. Do you kind of, does it feel like it's in chunks?
When I sat down to write, I haven't written a bio in a while, and when I sat down to write it and was thinking about, well, I'm acting in this and I wrote it and I should try to cover everything, I look at my life and I think, I just either can't hold a job or I get bored.
Right.
I mean, I think what happened with stand-up was I got to a point where that style of writing became very limiting to me, and And also the lifestyle of the comic and hanging out with other comedians all the time. I remember just starting to think as a person, I was like, you know, I don't think I find everything funny.
Right.
And you really have to have that mindset of what's the bit. And so every topic that came up, you'd be sitting at a table with comics and the most heinous subject could come up and immediately people would pounce on it to find the funny. And I understand it, that that's the requirement of the job, but I think I just got to a point as a person where I was like, I think I want to investigate a little bit deeper in my own writing.
Well, and that's the thing, is it somehow, and did you find when you made that transition or started working in other, you know, directions, that there's a stigma with being a comic, you know, that we're always going to go for the laugh, that, you know, because like for this, people were like, just stick with comedy. I like having a conversation. I feel the same way. I'm not constantly thinking of the funny. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, which is why I like talking to people.
You know? Absolutely. I mean, what was your question?
There's a stigma with going into any other sort of, you know, performance. If you're a stand-up comic, was there kind of an attitude toward that?
My whole career seems to be just sort of a meeting of conflicting attitudes towards everything. I get judged in the theater by having done work in television.
Sure.
I get work, you know, I get judged. People have preconceived ideas about what I'm going to be doing or bringing to the table. And it's nice, though, to, like when Bill Leff and Leo Benvenuti came, who are dear friends of mine, and when they came to see the play, it's nice that people that know your whole body work that can just see that you just want to do different things, you know.
Well, and this is definitely a departure from what I think people see or think of you when it comes to writing for television. Bill Leff had a whole conversation for about a half an hour, not just about this play, but it was an adorable conversation. He was saying how easily people buy into a performance, whether it's television, suspension of disbelief. You know, I know this isn't actually happening. But, you know, the way it's being portrayed, I'm in. It draws me in.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of, and I think because he also knows you, he was also having to separate that out as well.
Right.
But there are some very intense moments, and I think the audience is all in, because you can hear people gasping at different moments throughout the performance, you know, whether it has to do with someone, you know, having a very quiet, possibly desperate moment, and, you know, you've got a gun in your hand.
Right.
And I think the whole, I mean, like there's the, you must feel that when the whole audience is like, please, you know, and we don't know what the next thing is, but they're kind of like, he could.
Right.
You know, and it feels dangerous.
Right.
And I think that there was something really beautiful about that.
Well, the play is so quick and so much happens in a short amount of time. You know, I think it's like 75 minutes now. And it was originally conceived as a two-act play. And the moment that you're talking about, I actually put an act break in the original.
Interesting.
And then as we started rehearsing, and I was like, I think I want to take that act break out and just let this whole thing happen quickly, so that when the lights do finally fade at the end, I think I've had people come up to me and just go, I can't even digest this, you know. And there's something kind of wonderful about just dumping this in an audience member's lap and going, okay, you deal with it now.
Right. Is there ever any pressure from the theater? I wondered about that, because I was wondering, as a 75-minute performance, did they ask you if you would put in an intermission, or was the Den Theater cool about that?
I think they were fine.
Yeah, because it's perfect. You're right. Because it allows that transition. I mean, because then otherwise you're just moving on. The lights come back up. And you just be doing something else.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's well done. Coulter, when your character comes in as the bellboy and the fan of this mega new country star.
Big fan.
The energy changes. And it's interesting because you can kind of see these cynical in the industry guys, you know, who've been on the phone. They're trying to make, well, one of them is upset because he doesn't like the woman he's been paired with at the wedding. And so you come in and you're like rapid fire and just so excited. Have you ever been in a situation where you've watched a mega fan sort of going after somebody like that?
Yes, I have. Actually, I've been sitting next to a friend of mine, and oh my goodness, for the life of me, I can't even remember who we were listening to in college.
Right.
And she stood up to ask a question. They picked her, and she just went, I really like your work. And she'll know exactly who I'm talking about if she's listening to this. But so yeah, I've been around that. I've seen that. Shoot, I have my own mega fan status, you know, for different celebrities, actors, sports stars, you know, I have my whole life. So not quite to the point that Ollie does.
Right.
I get to heighten that a little bit, but it's fun.
Well, that's what's so dynamic about that is that here's someone who seems really eager and doesn't seem to get that he's imposing on these guys, and that this isn't how it's done. That's what we all think. And then, you know, you kind of flip that around. You're like, oh, I see. So I can't go too much farther because the audience has to go see it.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's
yeah, Ollie's
really
a lot
smart.
Smarter than he may appear
at
first.
He's so delightful. He's a delicious character.
Oh, yeah, he's fun.
It's really wonderful. There's all the characters, I think, are, you know, they don't, I think Jim probably has the most amount of time on stage, but I think all those characters are, they're sort of different versions of me at different ages in
right.
my life. So,
well, and then again, so there are, again, it's set up with the two guys and, you know, whether it's the agent, the manager, again, Justin's people, and then we get Coulter, and then Justin comes in with also a surprise entrance.
Right.
And then when you, and it every time there's this new layer, you kind of, it's so wonderful to experience because you're like, oh, okay, I don't really know where we're going, but I'm really going along for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
So when you come in, and it's just such a delightful character. What did you do to prepare for his uncle, for Uncle Jim?
Well, I mean, writing it, I knew that it was going to be a very difficult character to try to explain to somebody.
Right.
And I had an uncle, Robert, one of my dad's uncles that lived in...
Robert Roberts?
No, Robert okay. Johnson was
okay.
his name.
I was just checking.
On my mom's side.
Just curious.
But he was a tobacco farmer in Kentucky, and so he's in my head quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was writing it, it was one of those things where it was just like, I just would do the voice and stuff. So he sort of evolved. And then when he got on his feet, he actually became a little bit more... He started out more gruff and then became more sort of fragile. And
well, because there's a danger when we do a character like that. Anybody who, you know, wants to get into that southern, you know, whether they're a hillbilly or a redneck, mm-hmm. there's a danger of making them a caricature, which you stay away from by making him so fragile, right? We kind of see why he is that way a lot.
Right.
That sort of he puts that exterior up.
Well, as big of a character as he is, and he does seem, he also is a person that really wants to be invisible. And the kind of work that I like to do, I could never have done, you know, a big, broad caricature of a southern character, especially like that. And I think he's pretty, you know, there's a delicacy to him, I like to paint with a small brush, so.
Right.
He was kind of a fun thing to work on.
Which is the sort of a minimal aspect of where this performance takes place, because it is a smaller... How many seats are there? Is it 60 or so? 60 seats?
Mm-hmm.
I'm such a comic. How many tickets did we sell? 2, 4, 6, 8. Coulter, when you auditioned for this, were you familiar with Mark Roberts' work?
I mean, yeah. Once I kind of looked up the play and I mm-hmm. found out who wrote the play, and I was like, well, I need to find out about more Mark Roberts. And I was like, oh, holy smokes, this is the guy who wrote Mike and Molly.
Yep.
Created Mike and Molly, you know, wrote on 2 and a Half Men. I got to go at least try.
Right.
And I originally auditioned for Justin.
Right.
I didn't come in to audition for Ollie. I didn't see that posting. Actually, my roommate saw the posting and was like, you got to go audition for this. I just got my headshots done. So when I went in to audition, they asked me to step back out and read for Ollie. And
so smart.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was talking to Mark the other day, and he kind of said to me, it's like one of the first times he's ever had an audition where somebody walked in, and that's what he had imagined when he was writing it. So,
yeah, that's happened to me twice. Once with an actress in L.A. and once with Coulter. And when Coulter walked out of the room after reading Ollie, I went, well, we're done here.
That's great.
Nobody's ever going to beat that, because he was just the little Southern Jiminy Cricket in my head with this, you know, and he's in so endearing just to look at him. And,
mm-hmm.
then with the twist at the end.
He just want to pinch his cheeks. Pinch his cheeks and go, could you settle down a little bit? Take it down a notch. We are hanging out with our guests, Mark Roberts and Coulter Orion Smith. They are performing New Country at the Den Theater, and we have some tickets to give away after the news. Right now it's time for a quick break. I'm Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, joined by actor Coulter Orion Smith.
Hey.
Do you prefer that people say all three names?
You can just say Coulter's fine.
I can't. I feel like if you put all three names in, it means that you want them to be used.
Yeah. Coulter Smith's fine.
All right, Coulter. Just Coulter Smith. No.
My mom made up the middle name, so
She yell at you and use all three when she was mad?
No, definitely not. Okay. Just usually none of my names, other names.
That the FCC won't let us use on the air right
that's
now.
The ones.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking to, in all of his lives, comedian, writer, and actor, Mark Roberts. And we were talking a little bit off the air about writing for television. And, you know, it seems to me, you know, with a 75-minute play, does it sort of, have you honed that skill writing for a half hour, you know, I know it's like 22 and a half minutes, 23 minutes mm-hmm. of a contained sitcom. Is this something where you feel like the timing you try to, you know, you're not writing joke after joke. When we do those half hour comedies, there's a lot of like, you know, a lot of like ribbing, a lot of making fun of each other. This, you get to kind of spread out a little bit in 75 minutes, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you also get to examine the characters more.
Yeah. And I think you get to go a little, obviously, in a little darker areas.
Yeah, a little bit.
I do enjoy the formats of sitcoms, though. I mean, I'm actually really excited about getting back into a couple of things I'm working on right now, because I like the restrictions of that for some reason. I like the structure.
When Gary Shandling passed away a couple of weeks ago, you know, everyone, maybe wasn't paying attention before, just kind of knew, oh, he'd done the Gary Shandling show. He'd obviously been on Letterman, had been an actor. I was fascinated to find out he had been a sitcom writer in the 70s and started doing stand-up because he found it too constrained. He didn't like the format of it. Mm-hmm. And then eventually sort of reinvented what it meant to do a comedy on television.
Right.
So it's one of those things where you found a way to go off and do the things that you need to do, and that probably informs what you'll take back to LA after working on New Country. Do you think that's the case?
Yeah. I mean, when I was working on Two and a Half Men, I started writing. I was continuing to write plays all the time because I found that these other writers that I was working with, guys that had been doing television for years and years, they weren't honing their skills in their own work. They weren't continuing to work on things outside of sitcoms, and for me it just felt like one of those things. Well, I just want to become a better writer. I want to keep growing as a writer, and I don't ever want to lose that skill set, you know. So,
and when you created Mike and Molly, by the way, thank you for everybody who doesn't fit into a size zero. So the initial concept was a couple meets at an Overeaters Anonymous.
Right.
Is that the whole, was that really, where did that come from? I want to put real people on television, or is it someone that you knew or felt like, you know, a guy like Billy Gardell should get some work?
No, it was actually two ideas. I at the time I was the head writer for Two and a Half Men, and my stock was rising there. So Warner Brothers came to me and asked me if I'd be interested in giving me a script deal. And I said, sure. And at the time I was cocky enough and popular enough on Two and a Half Men that I went in and sat down with their comedy development person. I said, I want to do something blue collar in the Roseanne vein.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go write it. And they just said, okay, great. So I had been working on two things. I was working on I wanted to do a sitcom with a couple meeting. Mm-hmm. Instead of starting out with the couch and the three kids, and
right.
That actually start from square one. And I'd been working on this other thing of two Chicago cops. I had written just pages and pages of dialogue of two cops sitting in a squad car, you know, shooting the breeze with each other, and this sort of bromance between those guys. And I just decided to squish the two together. And then the Overeaters thing came from the fact that I did want to have large people on the show. I wanted them to be realistic-looking people. And I've struggled with my weight since I was 11, so it seemed, you know, like a legitimate area that I would be able to, you know, truthfully comment on. So I wrote the pilot, handed it in, got one note from Warner Brothers, and then 36 hours later,
what?
CBS bought it. Yeah, it was crazy.
That is crazy.
You tell that to other writers and they hate me.
No, there's no hate from me.
There's no development process like that. I got really lucky.
Yeah, no, I mean, because having gone through a bit of the process with my pilot, I mean, it was from December of turning in the script and notes all the way through February. Kind of every week of, like, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But I mean, there were layers, right? There were my producers, and then there was the studio, mm-hmm. and then a little bit from the network. So I can't even, 36 hours. That's spectacular. What was the note?
The note was the waiter was originally Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, we don't really like And I think it was because
in the diner where they hang out.
Yeah, okay. I think it was because they were developing Two Broke Girls at the same time, and they had a Russian cook.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to tell me that. No, we've got something else going on. So I just said, okay, fine. And then during my dinner break before the Two and a Half Men taping, I went into my office, and at the time I was training with this Golden Gloves and ex-Olympic boxer named Sammy, who was from Senegal.
Oh, no.
And he had told me all these great stories. I had his voice in my head, so I just changed the waiter to a Senegalese.
To even more wonderful results.
Yeah.
That's great.
Named him Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's so great.
Called Sammy up and said, I just changed the character to you. And he went, okay, Mark.
And also a lot of comedians in Chicago love that that the mom's boyfriend's name is Vince Moranto.
Vincent Moranto.
Yes, which is a comedian in Chicago, also a regular on our show. So it's a lot of fun. And for the characters that you wrote for, because there were so many strong women on that show, on Mike and Molly. And see, I'm gonna come right back to New Country. I'm not losing my eye on the ball, Kelsey. You write women so forcefully, because all the women on Mike and Molly are just incredibly, just and diverse too. Her sister is, you know, kind of this. She's not a tramp, not a slut, but she likes to have fun. She's mm-hmm. got her own take on life. You know, Susie Kurtz, spectacular as the mom, but all of them a little bit of a glass of wine all the time. Nothing wrong with that. But Sharon in this play comes in with, and again, every entrance is so specific. You know, it starts out with just two people already on stage. And again, as I mentioned earlier, the layers that you then bring on are so just spectacular. But Sharon comes in, she's got a motorcycle helmet, she's in leather and just badass, and she means business. And again, there's that moment of like, what's going to happen?
Right.
Tell us a little bit about the creation of Sharon.
Well, I mean, I've always, if you read or have read or seen any of my other work, I always write very strong female characters, and I don't set out to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, part of the theme of this play, and I think part of how the world is in my eyes, is that, you know, men have destroyed they are the destructors of the earth, and women are the ones that keep it going and clean up after them.
And what happens when you push them too far?
Yeah.
That's a little bit of what you kind of peel back, I think.
Yeah, and I thought it was, you know, that this woman had sacrificed so much to help this man get to where he was. And I think, you know, if men were honest, they would admit the fact that a lot of us have and in our lives used women as sort of, you know, guardrails and stepping stones.
Right.
And I think that's fairly common. I mean, certainly in Los Angeles, you know, there's the First Wives Club. It's not really fake, you know. Guys get to a certain point, and then it becomes about their own.
Everything becomes disposable.
Yeah, mm-hmm. because they're facing their own immortality. And so it's, well, I need something fresh and new, so I won't remember that I'm also dying.
Yeah, yeah. Just push it in the back of your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think about when you hear that kind of stuff, Coulter? That men treat women as, because this really is when Sharon comes in. She's the only woman in the play. You know, what's your experience with women in theater? Because we've talked about this on the show before, and how you know, sort of, how do you balance gender roles?
You know, I mean,
and that's a weird question for you.
And it's kind of a weird answer because, you know, I grew up with my mother, mm-hmm. You know, my dad was in prison the majority of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up with just my mom, who worked three, sometimes four jobs to make sure I had my horses and could do the things I needed to do. So I've always had this great respect for women, but I'm also from a place that doesn't always.
A little macho.
Doesn't always do that. So when I see this stuff in plays like this, I mean, I love Sharon. I think mm-hmm. she's a brilliant character.
Yep.
And the show definitely needs her. I mean,
yeah,
she's very important.
I agree. There's so many important elements. And I want to invite everyone to come see the show with us, right? April 21st. We're going to have a WGN pretty late. Are you rolling your eyes? Is that the night we agreed on? I want to make sure.
No, let's do it.
Let's 21st. Do it. The 21st. Are we giving, you want to give away like a pair of tickets or two pairs of tickets? What do you want to do, Kelsey?
50
tickets.
Fill the house with Patty Vasquez fans.
All right. 312-981-7200. Come join us and for the performance of New Country on April 21st. 312-981-7200. We'll give away the first two callers, two pairs of tickets, but I'll give them away throughout the next couple weeks so people have a chance to hear more about the show, look it up, and things like that. More with our guests when we come back on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN.